Welcome to this week's edition of 10 Minute Tickets Talks. I got a very special guest, Justin Ramquist. Justin is the Associate Vice President of the Indiana Pacers. He's the person in charge of all the Pacers' B2B ticket sales and is known throughout the NBA as probably one of the top B2B ticket sales managers, coaches, and teachers. As the Pacers do some very unique things related to B2B ticket sales. Justin, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me on the talk here. I do want to say first that going back to my first job in sports, you and Marshall Steinberg hired me in that position. So I got everything I know about B2B ticket sales, my foundation came from you. So I appreciate you having me on here. It's a little intimidating to talk B2B ticket sales with you. But when we talk about B2B ticket sales with the Pacers, the foundation is that 50 to 60% of just our ticket packages alone are businesses, are corporations that are using tickets. And then you're looking for another 40% are just consumers. So the importance of B2B ticket sales to our market and our team, it's huge. When you look at the success the team has had with the Pacers, when I started 8 years ago, we went to the Eastern Conference Finals. Phones rang a little bit, but not to the amount that you thought the phones would ring when you go to the Eastern Conference Finals and almost go to the finals, right? But then in my second year, that summer, Paul George broke his leg, and we were scrambling to figure out what's gonna happen. And we actually broke his leg a week before we were about to have our boot camp for B2B ticket sales. When Paul George broke his leg, when you look at the B2B ticket sales foundation, that's what gave us our base. I know when people are diving into consumer sales versus B2B sales, B2B sales aren't as likely to not renew due to the team performance. We have built a base here where we have focused on ROI with our corporate ticket holders and what we can provide them outside of what's just happening on the court, whether that's introductions that we're making for them or ways that we're giving their clients or prospects experiences that ultimately help them build relationships and close business. That's what we focused on, and that's the reason why a lot of our companies stayed with us through, whether it's Oladipo injured and out for the season or Paul George out for the season. So. That's the main reason why B2B ticket sales is pretty important to us.
And I think that's critical for everybody listening. I don't care whether you're a minor league sports team or major league sports team, is the business community buys not because you're winning. Sure, that's nice. That helps. They're going to be a lot more enthusiastic. But the business community buys because of all the reasons they can use your tickets to impact their business. Client entertainment, prospect relationship development, employee reward retention. And if you don't win, they still can do that. Mm-hmm. And perfect example, when Paul George breaks his leg, a consumer or a fan goes, I'm out, I'm done, you're not going to be any good this year. A business says, well, you know what? You might not be great, but LeBron's still coming to town. Durant's still coming to town. Harden's yep. still coming to town. This is still valuable for us. So you had mentioned ROI. Obviously, there's an ROI for the business buyer. So talk a little bit about how you present the ROI for the business buyer. And then also how you structure your sales staff to make sure you're maximizing covering the business community.
Yep. So when we're talking to the business buyer, when we are actually measuring out the ROI, we break it down into basically three different things. Number one, how can we make you more money that's going to lead to that? So it's if one of your sales reps would bring out one game per month over the season, how many of them do you think would ultimately end up closing, right? And if it's just one, we're using what their average key account size is to show them what their return on investment is. What we have tried to do to go beyond that, we actually started a program called the Pacers Business Alliance here. And again, this is trying to take from what's happening on the court. If the team isn't successful and for some reason they can't get someone to go to those games when we're playing against some of the lower tiered opponents, well, then for those games, we'll have Pacers Business Alliance events where the whole point of them is we're making introductions for all of our corporate ticket holders. So hopefully what happens is they either meet a sales rep that has a connection to a decision maker they're trying to get in with, or maybe they bring out a client of theirs that is trying to get in with another company that's a corporate ticket holder of ours, and we are making sure that we're fostering those relationships. So when we talk about ROI, we make sure to bring up, hey, it's not just you bringing out your prospects and closing business, because a Pacer game, in the long run, just because they come out to a Pacer game, that doesn't mean that they're going to do business with them. Now, it can help them build that relationship so their sales reps ultimately close that deal. But we can make those introductions. We can help foster those experiences that put you in a better light and also close deals from those introductions.
it's essentially one giant networking event. But there's people already, you and your sales staff are making the introductions for people as opposed to them hopefully bumping into somebody at a chamber event or even in the club restaurant at the arena. It's essentially you're orchestrating business growth to make that happen. How, with your sales staff, how many B2B ticket salespeople do you have that focus on B2B, and then how do you provide them the B2B leads?
Yep. So with our full staff, we have 8 corporate ticket sales reps. And those corporate ticket sales reps are different than our premium sales reps. The premium sales reps will focus strictly on their theater boxes, leases, any lease product. The corporate ticket sales, they focus on selling ticket packages, our groups and group sales and suite rentals. So they are broken out into 8 different territories. And the reason we do territories rather than a free for all in our CRM is we don't want to leave any rock unturned. So even if they're out in their territories canvassing, we try to promote as much as possible. Get out in your territories. If you're not in the office, that's perfect. We want you out there, right? So when they're out there, they may find something when it comes to leads. Like, you know, Steve, as soon as we get a leads list, even if we are synced up with our system with Zoom Info or whatever it was, data.com back in the day, those leads aren't always up to date. And there's new companies that move into the area. So they are able to really dive into their territories, find relationships in those territories, influence them, and go from there.
So once you've got the leads distributed,
yep,
obviously then they have an ROI target. And what are the expectations of the B2B salesperson from there?
So with our B2B sales folks, here's what happens. In their first year, B2B sales is tough. It's difficult, right? So they're learning that first year. And we are trying to get our, 3-to-1, 5-to-1 return on reps. But that first year is sometimes an investment in those reps to train them up to understanding the industry knowledge, how to tailor their pitches, how to develop strong relationships in different industries or in the business market. So that first year may be somewhat of an investment into them. They still, for the most part, will give us a return that may be lower to like 2-to-1. But after that second year is really when they get and they start to take off. And that's when you're looking for your 3-to-1 return. And then they turn into their third year when they are leaders in the sales department. And they're just exploding in sales and giving us huge returns.
Yeah, I'd seen a study once before that it was first year salesperson, if you get 2-to-1, second year salesperson generally doubles their sales. Mm-hmm. And you're obviously not doubling what you're paying them. You might double their commission rate, but you're not doubling their salary. So as they go, if you invest the time and energy in them, the return goes up dramatically for them.
Absolutely. And it comes with understanding not only the product, but it just comes with understanding your business acumen and developing those relationships in the B2B world. It's tough. You can't just be dropped into a territory and all of a sudden hit the ground running and sell a bunch of tickets.
And that's a good point. Talk a little bit to the audience about the training you do. So what type of, are you hiring somebody fresh out of college? You're hiring somebody with a year or two of experience, maybe at another team at a lower level or in a different industry. What's the makeup of your B2B salesperson when they come on board? Then how do you train them to get them up to speed quickly?
Typically, we try to look from within first. So our consumer sales team, which they're focused on selling just to consumers or taking inbound calls, or our group sales team are typically where our B2B sales folks come from. So they have some experience in sales. But when they come over, it's we sit them down for a week-long boot camp first off to just teach them the pitch that we have. It's a script. They learn the script word for word. But what I tell them when they're done is, hey, if there's something in here that's not natural to you, if there's something that you don't see yourself saying, well, let's get together after this, write something up. So then when you're out in front of these decision makers, you're saying stuff you feel comfortable with. Now after that, we're always looking at lead generation, right? So how are they going out and developing leads? So we train on networking, we train on canvassing, going door to door, dropping off cards, picking up cards. Of course, we train on handling objections and that sort of stuff. But when it comes to actually trying to get in with the company and get those appointments, we have a sales cadence that we have set up, but they still have to know what to say when they get on the phone. They have to know if they're using a one mob video to try and get in, what are they saying to that decision maker to try and get in with them? How are they using the referral sources that they have to get in with these decision makers?
And I think that's huge because hey, LinkedIn's great. You can make some connections on LinkedIn. Some of them are legit. Some of them aren't. If you're a Pacers salesperson, you're trying to connect with an industry of somebody that you're trying to get a meeting with, because you're the Pacers, they'll say yes. Mm-hmm. Referrals, great. You know, networking events, great. But you still have to be able to say, hey, I want to come see you because I got an idea. I got a way I can help impact your business. Can I come see you for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, and connect that? So technology is awesome, but in the business community, they aren't chomping at the bit to wait for a Pacers salesperson. They've been sitting there waiting for you to call, right? They're still working at it.
I wish they were calling us, but yeah, they work at it, yes.
So you get the initial week-long boot camp. What's the training look like after that? How often are you videotaping them? How often are you as their manager going out on sales calls? What does that look like?
Well, our director of corporate ticket sales, Nick Hendricks, will do a lot of the one-on-one training. But we actually have our senior reps. Either our senior reps or our director of corporate ticket sales will go on their appointments for at least the first 2 weeks, sometimes the first month, depending on where they're at with their training. They have their one-on-ones that they do with Nick, and he'll go through the role plays. We also have had them role play with, whether it's myself or Barry Gibson, our vice president of ticket sales as well. And here's the thing, if you can pitch Barry, you can really pitch anyone, because he's the worst prospect you could possibly have in a sales pitch. And I tell him that all the time. So beyond that, once they get the basic pitches down, what we start to do is try to introduce more of these industry guest speakers, or people they can talk to start really understanding how industries operate, whether it's a CPA, law firm, the construction industry, because what that does is it lets them tailor their pitches a lot more, speak their lingo, but then it also helps them understand how to ask for referrals. They understand who they're working with that they can ask who are some subcontractors that you work with who are always trying to entertain you to some events. So it just helps them out, become a smarter salesperson.
Have you found it's better to hire somebody fresh out of school if you can't find somebody internally? Somebody fresh out of school who's not going to really have any business acumen? Or do you pull somebody who may have been selling pharmaceuticals or copiers or something like that for 3 or 4 years? What tends to work best?
We have typically pulled the majority of people that we've hired outside have been someone who have had some sort of ticket sales experience.
Okay.
So I've never personally hired someone out of school into corporate ticket sales. We've done that into groups and into consumer sales, but not into corporate ticket sales.
So the goal is elevate them from within, or if you have to pull them from outside, they've got to have some ticket sales experience at another team that come and highly recommend it. Yep. All right, one more question, so we stay within our 10 minutes. The 2021 season is going to be rather unique. And even as you go forward, 21-22 might be a little bit crazy.
Yep.
Have you thought through the differences and how your salespeople are going to get appointments, the adjustments they're going to have to make on the sales pitch, adjustments they're going to have to make? Maybe it's instead of a lot of face-to-face, getting people to your arena or Zoom. What does that sales pitch look like going forward for the next 6 to 12 months?
Yep. And we're actually in a pretty unique situation too, because we are just finishing up phase one of our renovations. And so we actually have planned to use our sales experience center to invite people out to see, and we don't even know if we'll be able to use that yet, right? So going forward, we suspect a lot of our pitches may be done virtual with people that aren't coming in, right? And we partner with a company called Channel One to really boost up the decks that we're using. So it's more than just the testimonial or the some pictures here and there, but it's got some interaction. We're looking at putting a hype video into it to get them excited and ready for what we're about to talk about. You know, we always talk about, and Steve, we were talking about this before, is that we always try to do something to break that preoccupation barrier. Normally we're throwing the basketball at them to let them catch it and get their mind off of work. Well, now we have to figure out something else. If we're going to be doing virtual meetings, how can we get their attention right away and get them out of that preoccupation barrier? So we're looking at that some kind of videos. The other thing that I think is going to be really important going forward is, like, if everyone's working from home or if it's more of a mobile workforce, it could be a lot tougher to get those decision makers on the phone, where relationships are going to become so much more important. So we are emphasizing more than ever. We did it before, but the amount of networking and growing their networks and just asking to meet with influencers within a company that can help them get meetings, that's we're spending a lot of attention on that right now.
So shifting from cold call, cold call, cold call, which quite frankly over the last 5, 8, 10 years has gotten harder and harder anyway, to relationship networking. And again, if you're doing the right thing relationship networking wise, team performance becomes way less important.
Right. And it's like, we still, don't get me wrong, we still make our cold calls, and that's still gonna be an important part of what we do. But it's the, especially the Indianapolis business community, it's so connected, and people, if you don't know someone, someone wants to know them, they want to know them. So it's perfect for that relationship building, networking, referral system.
Yeah. You're not talking about Manhattan. You're not talking about Los Angeles, where it's 40 million people. In a town your size, which is not certainly probably in the bottom five, bottom eight in terms of market size in the NBA, that's even more important. And I think one thing I would encourage, obviously you guys do a great job of, but anybody listening to this, is training your salespeople to put them so they are prepared for any scenario they might get into. Because realistically, if you don't teach them how to do networking, they're not going to do it effectively. If you don't teach them how to ask for referrals and really practice it, they're not going to do it effectively. So training on the B2B side of it is hugely important.
And that's a great point too. One of the, what we try to do is, you know, the old saying, treat it like a game, right? So when you're role playing, don't let your reps make stuff up. If they forgot collateral, don't let them pretend that they're pretending to use collateral. It's like, well, how would they pivot in a real pitch during that situation, right? Or if, how many reps have role play with you and they walk in there and say, oh, you've got a Pacers jersey on your wall. You must be a big fan, right? And so they try to make that role play pitch easier for them. What we try to do is it's they can't make stuff up. They can't, if they forgot collateral, if they've got, it's practice like it's a game. Same thing with networking. When we do our networking role plays, we actually have them play different industries and different characters, but they make it like it's a game. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, and the analogy I always use is golf. I play a lot of golf. I'm the best driving range golfer ever, because I'm standing on a perfectly flat stance, I got a great lie, or it's on a tee, and I can always hit that well. But when I go down on the golf course, I might be in the rough, I might be on a side hill lie, I might be in a divot, and all of a sudden, you got to be prepared. So same thing with sales. It's just like practicing your golf game. Practice like you'd be playing, and then it becomes much more real, because salespeople can get bored and tired of the constant role playing, the videotape. You got to make it legit. So. Justin, appreciate it. And for those of you who are listening to this, we're going to be hosting a B2B webinar on October 27th. Justin will be participating, as will CJ Johnson, who's president of the Winston-Salem Dash. We'll spend about 45 minutes on B2B ticket sales strategy, tactics, what has been done, and what's going to happen going forward. So if you have not signed up yet for our B2B ticket sales webinar, you can go to the ultimatetoolkit.com website, see it there. And join us for that. And then you can ask Justin all the questions in the world you want. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.